price of gas in China.
The Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. The past year, folks in most parts of the world have taken a pretty good beating at the gas pump. But the Chinese have been enjoying cheap gasoline. That's because the government controls the price. Over the weekend, China bumped up prices 3 to 5%. But as Jocelyn Ford reports, that's not much.
When it comes to the price of gasoline, the government's driving principle is keep the people happy.
The government is afraid that any high energy prices will cause protests across the country, particularly from the farming communities.
Energy consultant Victor Shum says that's why the weekend price hike was so tiny. He says it won't do much to close the gap with global prices.
It's a small band-aid over a big wound.
That gap has been bleeding China's government-owned refineries. They have to buy crude oil at world prices, but aren't allowed to pass the cost on to consumers. Instead, the government gives them a subsidy. After the latest price hike, the government also plans to offer fuel subsidies to China's 750 million farmers and other low-income groups. About 40% of oil consumed in China goes to transportation. In Beijing, I'm Jocelyn Ford for Marketplace.
Here in the U.S., gas prices are up 15 cents over the past couple weeks. The Lundberg survey puts the average at $2.49 a gallon for regular unleaded. That's 40 cents higher than it was a year ago. Cheapest gas in the country, Salt Lake City, at $2.25, and the most costly was in Honolulu at $2.80 a gallon. Today, the Federal Open Market Committee holds its first meeting under new leader Ben Bernanke. The Fed chairman might be new, but analysts expect more of the same when it comes to interest rates. Amy Scott reports.
Analysts expect the Fed will raise short-term interest rates another quarter point tomorrow to 4.75%.
They've done it 14 times in a row. Why stop now?
Economist David Weiss with Standard & Poor's says despite close to 2 years of Fed tightening, the economy is showing few signs of slowing down. He expects the Fed to keep nudging up interest rates to fend off inflation.
Given how strong the first quarter looks, I think we're going to see them hit 5.
As in 5%. So will mortgage rates jump too? So far, long-term interest rates have stayed relatively flat. Investment strategist Jim Paulson with Wells Capital Management says the Fed may be acting too cautiously.
One of the fallouts from all that caution is they're probably letting the economy get a pretty good head of steam here before they're going to put much pressure onto the brake pedal.
The housing market may help slow it down. Last month, sales of new homes dropped by more than 10%. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Apple Computer hadn't even released the first Macintosh when it was sued by the Beatles' Apple record label for stealing its name. This was 1978. The company settled the dispute 3 years later, and Apple Computer agreed to stay out of the music biz. Well, I'm sure even Steve Jobs couldn't have imagined iTunes back then. So 25 years later, this name thing is back to court. Maybe if it's resolved, you'll actually be able to buy Beatles songs on iTunes. Wall Street eked out a small gain on Friday. The Dow was up 9 points to 11,272. The NASDAQ gained 12 to 2312. The S&P 500 climbed a point to 1302. Oil is back above $64 a barrel today. This is Marketplace. The drugstore chain Walgreens announces its earnings today, and lately they have been scorching. Patrick Hirsch explains.
As the population of the U.S. has gotten older, Walgreens has been making a bundle. Baby boomers are using more prescription drugs and they're buying more generics, which means bigger profits for drugstores. Stephanie Hoff, a retail analyst at Edward Jones, says Walgreens is still top of the drugstore heap, but its biggest competitor, CVS, has been closing the gap.
At the margin, CVS is definitely executing better. That's clearly part of the reason that comparable store sales have started to flatten out for Walgreens and we've started to see gains for CVS.
Hoff says Walgreens' biggest assets are its stores. It has fewer than CVS, but it has better locations, and most Walgreens include lucrative drive-thrus. I'm Patrick Hirsch from Marketplace.
This is the Marketplace Morning Report. We are produced and distributed by American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. Market data and news brought to you by Reuters. The facts without spin as they happen. Reuters helps you stay in the know now.
This is Marketplace. I'm Scott Jagow.
And now it's time for the Sloan Sessions.
The Final Four is set in college basketball, but we want to talk about a different kind of March Madness, the Wall Street version. 6 years ago in March, the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ reached their all-time highs. The Dow did it a couple months earlier. Then it all came crashing down. This March, the stock market is again closing in on those record numbers. Newsweek's Alan Sloan joins us now. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Scott.
People attributed the crash in 2000 to irrational exuberance. We're not back to that, are we?
We're still not even remotely close to the in the big indexes to what they were 6 years ago Friday, which turned out to have been, in hindsight, the peak of the market. The S&P 500 is down something like 15% still after 6 years. The Wilshire 5000, which is the whole U.S. stock market, is down something like 11%.
Is it fair to say that people who invested back then are still behind?
Well, it depends on what you invested in. Now, if you followed advice that many people gave you in our profession and said growth stocks and tech stocks, you're still behind. If, however, you're a boring old troglodyte like, say, me, and you went to what they call small cap and mid cap stocks, or if you actually went into boring old value stocks, which everyone said were dead, you have done extremely well in the past 6 years.
I also hear a lot of people talking about the fact that now corporate profits are much higher than they were at that time.
If you look at a company like Dell or Microsoft, which is selling at roughly half the price it was 6 years ago, the companies are making much more money. They're much stronger than they were. What you had in 2000, perfectly fine companies doing very nicely, whose stocks were wildly overvalued relative to any measure other than the mania.
So I am dying to hear Alan Sloan's take on Google being added to the S&P 500.
I can't help but flash back to the late 1999 when S&P shook up the online world by adding Yahoo, or as you would call it, Yahoo. And in the week between the time the announcement came and the stock was actually added to the S&P 500, it ran up 65%. A few more weeks, it had hit something like 118. And the last time I looked, it was around 30. So if Google replicates Yahoo, there are going to be a lot of sorry Google shareholders. And I've been completely wrong about the stock price of Google, but maybe sooner or later, as they used to say when I was in the South, the blind pig can find an acorn.
All right, Mr. Sloan, thanks as always.
My pleasure, Mr. Jacob.
Alan Sloan is the Wall Street editor for Newsweek magazine. He'll be back next week with another edition of the Sloan Sessions. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
You know, taking family to court is
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.